Tom Mikaitis, who is a professor at DePaul, works on terrorism and insurgency and military history. And Tom, I guess when we see what happened here today, I don't think people who are familiar with the development of terrorism in Europe and these jihadi cells is really surprised that Brussels was a target, are they?
You know, it has a significant Muslim minority population, 7%, which, along with France, is probably the highest in Europe. But the real issue, of course, is that that population is largely ghettoized. Berg you're talking about is, in fact, you know, one of the larger ones. And it has, you know, very high unemployment, 50% in some areas. And it also has sent between 450 and 500 fighters, people that went and joined ISIS. That's the largest per capita of any country in Europe. And something like 120 have returned, you know, and of course, not only do they become part of the network, they also become recruiters and facilitators and things of that nature. So no one is surprised, you know, that an attack of this kind would occur again in Europe.
So when they're in Syria, and mm-hmm. and Raqqa really is the center, the sort of capital of this, right, for them. This is where the training and initialization of these people starts.
Yeah, I'm not sure of the exact place, but that sounds right. Sure. Oh, yeah. Raqqa. I'm sorry, yeah. I misheard you. Yes, yeah, Raqqa is correct.
Yeah.
I thought you said something else. Yes, that is correct. I don't think that's the only training center. That is the symbolic sort of capital. It's one of the heart of their areas of control.
I saw earlier today on, I think it was on Fox, it was the guy, the retired Navy SEAL who killed bin Laden, was out, and he was talking about this. He's become very political of late, and saying that that's really where, if the U.S. is going to put boots on the ground, they have to take Raqqa back. And I guess the real question, and Tom, I think you have a much better handle on this, if you take it back, who do you give it to?
Yeah, you know, exactly right. I mean, I'm really, it's unfortunate because the Navy SEALs have always had, particularly SEALs Team 6, an ethos of being non-political, even when they retire. And just because you're a very good tactician, you know, which I'm sure he's a superb tactician, doesn't mean necessarily that you're an authority on the strategic thing here. And exactly right. Yeah, you know, take it back from who? That's fine. Get it from ISIS. Who's going to govern it? That's exactly the problem we found in Iraq. There's a you break it, you bought it. Right. That's the mentality. So, yeah, we can go in tomorrow and recapture that territory. And that's sort of what they would like us to do, because they would like nothing better than to tie down a large American ground force in the Middle East, just like they did in Iraq. And I think that would be a huge mistake.
Yeah.
A lot of concerns about what now, and whether the man they have in custody in connection with the Paris attacks, Abdeslam, was part of this attack, whether he was intended to be actually involved personally before they nabbed him, whether they moved up the attack because he was in custody and maybe talking. A lot of talk about that. What do you know, or what do you suspect is going
on? Well, you know, it's I had said from the beginning that I think it is quite likely that the attack was already in the works, and that what his capture probably did was to accelerate the timetable, because they were understandably concerned that the Belgian security forces would close in and shut them down. Now, whether he was intended to be part of this or part of something else, or simply knew something was in the works, I don't know, and I don't know if it's known. They did find explosives and weapons in the apartment where they apprehended him. So clearly there was, and they also very quickly put out, you know, an alert for somebody else trying to capture another person they knew of.
And we do not know if that person was involved in today's attack.
No, we don't. You know, and it's very, you know, I've gotten this question all day today. Should they have done more? Didn't they know they got warnings? And I keep saying, you know, to use the metaphor of the week, intelligence gathering is not an Easter egg hunt. It's not like you find the golden egg and you get a precise piece of intelligence that tells you what's going to happen when. Once in a while, that might happen. More often than not, you're trying to put together a jigsaw puzzle with, you know, half the pieces or more missing, and you can get what's called strategic warning, which is a an alert, you know, an increased chatter and so on, says, hey, something is imminent, it's likely to be a certain, you know, this kind of an attack, but we don't know where or precisely when.
Right.
And what do? You know, protecting a mass transit system is, and protecting, you know, airports all over the country, never mind, you know, all over Western Europe or the rest of the world, is not easy to do.
Right. What do you, I mean, are you really going to stop? I mean, that's one of the things I thought about, yeah. Dr. Mikaitis, today is, you know, if you want to stop, and I think it was only a matter of time before terrorist organizations. I think what's remarkable about this particular attack and is important about it is this is an attack on aviation assets, but they're doing it from the ground side. They're doing it from the soft underbelly of this facility. And that's the soft underbelly of every airport, right? Because you don't do searches going into that. And that, I'm going to tell you, could change everything.
Well, that, actually, there are some places in the world where they do. I've been to those airports. Istanbul is a case in point. And I think Colombia, my recollection is Bogota, Colombia is
as
well.
And Tel Aviv, too, I know.
Yeah. Tel Aviv, the security starts in the parking lot. You're in pretty intense surveillance.
Or in your hotel if you're leaving or things like that.
Yeah. But essentially, what you do in a place like Istanbul is you come in and you must go through a metal detector and a quick screen just to get into the terminal itself.
Yeah.
And then you go into, you know, you go get your ticket, you
but
go
is
get your boarding pass.
Practical? I mean, I guess that's the question
that
we're all going to ask ourselves.
You know, anything can be done. The question is, you have to be willing to accept the insecurity. I've been concerned about this for a really long time because what ISIS has been doing, and even before them, Al Qaeda, going back some time, is as we've hardened, you know, certain sites. It's hard to hit buildings. It's harder to get to an airplane. So what do? They're changing their tactics and going for crowd attacks, going for, you know, venues where there are lots of people and striking out at them. And exactly right. I mean, you know, all of us have been through an airport, or most of us, like O'Hare, on a crowded day, mm-hmm. lots of people. Much easier to kill them than to try to get to an airplane, hijack
right.
it, and ram it into
right.
a building.
Right, which tells you a little, maybe something about the stack, but not enough to know exactly what's behind it. Tom, thanks very much. Appreciate
Thank you,
it, sir, and your expertise.
Yeah.
You bet.
He is, by the way, at Dr. Mikaitis, MOCKAITIS, if you want to follow him on social media, and professor of history at DePaul.